Starting in fifth grade, I thought of myself as a beatnik. I first heard about beatniks from my father in the spring of 1959. He was a social psychologist who earned his living doing market research. He'd just come home from a convention in San Francisco and was telling us about a study that a psychiatrist had presented. Well, telling my mother, really, since my brother and sister were only 3 and 7. But I was almost 10, fascinated by what Dad was saying, and eager to distinguish myself from the little kids. This psychiatrist had spent 100 nights studying beatniks in the beatnik neighborhoods of San Francisco, attending all-night parties in their pads, and administering personality tests, my father said, to a full quarter of the tribe. A tribe? In a big city in modern America? Like the Lost Boys in Peter Pan? I asked. Yes, exactly, my father replied with a smile. Notwithstanding my anti-establishment precocity, I became a member of Pep Club, the same as every girl at Locust Junior High School in Wilmette, Illinois in the early 1960s. My cheering was always just this side of pointedly unenthusiastic. Our uniforms, black tights, black skirts, black gloves outdoors in cold weather, made the whole business easier for me to rationalize, as did the fact that we were the Locust Wolves. Wolves seemed like a beatnik animal. Near the end of eighth grade, for the entire week before the last baseball game of the school year, Chuck Levy had been going on and on about how I was going to go bananas when I heard the band play at the game. He and Alex McAllister had written the arrangement with the music teacher. But neither Chuck, sax, nor Alex, percussion, would tell me what their surprise song was, which finally irritated me so much that on the morning of the game I lied and told him I might skip it and go to a Ban the Bomb rally in Chicago with my mother and father. My parents thought it was important to keep an eye on what Dad called even the reasonable war machine. He'd grown up in Denmark and had been involved with the Danish resistance as a young man, then spent a year as a political prisoner in a Nazi camp at the end of the war, which made our Republican neighbors cut the peacenik foreigner some slack. "You'll regret it forever if you're not there, Viv," Chuck told me. His big smile made the nickname even more annoying. "I'll regret it more if World War III starts and I didn't do everything I could to prevent it." Alex had a big grin, too. He was dying to spill the beans. "It'll be a cooler experience if it's a surprise. Trust me." "Cooler? We're talking about the band." I tried guessing while simultaneously pretending I didn't care. "You've got to come, Hollander," Chuck said, sounding a little desperate. "Seriously, it's going to be amazing. For you." "For me? Maybe. Where have all the flowers gone?" The band had already played that at the Thanksgiving concert after the Cuban Missile Crisis. "Blowing in the Wind." They shook their heads. I couldn't keep guessing unsuccessfully and maintain an air of omniscient ennui. "Well, enjoy yourselves. I'm late for study hall. Bye." I don't remember the opposing team that afternoon, or who won. But I remember with absolute clarity the first song the band played during the seventh inning. As the musicians lined up and readied themselves, I noticed Chuck wasn't among the other saxophones and clarinets, which worried me. Then I caught Alex's eye, and he was grinning and excited, drumsticks at the ready. I didn't recognize the tune when they played the first 4 long, low notes, the tuba squeezing off a quick blast between each one, nor when the same sequence repeated. A kind of do-wah, re-wah, me-wah, re-wah. But when the electric guitar broke in with the loud, twangy eighth notes, however, I shrieked and jerked my hands and knees up as if I'd gotten a shock. Tears formed, and I started giggling, all of which would have been a major embarrassment if the song hadn't also startled all the other Pep Club girls, who were smiling and murmuring and glancing around. It was the theme music from Dr. No. Not many of the other kids knew the song, since the movie had come out only a couple of weeks earlier, and it was the first James Bond film. But an electric guitar played fast and loud at an official school event in the daytime in 1963 was unprecedented, subversive, thrilling. And the big amplifier was right beneath us, under the bleachers, with the volume turned all the way up. We felt the sound hitting our thighs. There had never been a more glamorous moment at Locust Junior High.